I don't know about you, but there are weird pieces of pop culture flotsam and ephemera that just stick in my head. So I'm going to share one of those bits that's been stuck in my head, I think, from 1977, since 1977. All right? Stuck in my head. Every now and then, it just kind of goes over and over again, just like an earworm, only there's no music. It goes like this. What is, was. What was, will be. What will be, was, but will be again. Anybody have a clue where that's? No, it's just me that's afflicted with this, right? 1977, what was on TV in 1977? It's something said by a character named Arnold Horshack from the TV show Welcome Back, Cotter, which nobody remembers anymore, except during this episode of the show, Horshack had dropped out of school. Cotter is a teacher. He teaches the slow kids, the remedial class. And Horshack has dropped out of school, and he's joined a cult. And the cult's central belief is this. What is, was. What was, will be. What will be, was, but will be again. And he says it kind of like that. What will be, was, but will be again. They say it over and over again, which, you know, didn't help, because now it really is stuck in my head. And so I hope that maybe now I have some people who share my affliction. I don't remember anything about the program, what happens. I mean, I assume they kind of deprogram him, right? And he gets back to school, and all I remember is what is, was. What was, will be. What will be, was, but will be again. Sorry, I apologize. I'm sure we're all relieved when I assume Horshack gets back to the real world, quote unquote, back to school, and that we think he might be creating some possibilities for his future so that his future is not just a repeat of the past. But this is actually one of the more perhaps esoteric things that religion does, but it really has to do with what we do every day. If you want to understand a religion, one good question to ask is, what is your relationship with time? What should be your relationship with time? Lots of religions have a significant investment in the past. The central texts of many religions are quite old, even ancient. Christian scriptures go back 2,000 years. Buddhist scriptures go back even farther. There are some Hindu scriptures that go back 3,500 years, and Jewish scriptures go back even further, perhaps to the 11th or 10th centuries before the Common Era. So that's 13 or 14,000 years ago. Generally, the older something is, the more weight it's given. I like reading the English translations of the ancient Chinese text called the Tao Te Ching. In 1973, archaeologists found copies that could be dated from 168 BCE, several hundred years older than the examples that we're currently lying about. So, whole new wave of translations and thinking, oh, maybe we haven't understood what this is really about, and now we have to look at these texts. And then in 1993, they found texts that were 200 years even older than that. So again, another whole redo. And a lot of people argue that the older the version, the truer or better it is. But with the Tao Te Ching, we're pretty sure that the Tao Te Ching starts off as an oral tradition and then gets written down later. And so when weren't mistakes getting written down? Because I assume it was humans doing the writing, right? So when weren't there mistakes? So what's to say that any one text is truer necessarily than another just because it's older? I mean, who knows who wrote that one down, right? Sorry for the rabbit hole here. But the point is, there can be an assumption among us that old is good and we should look at the past. Unitarian Universalism respects the past. We revere past teachers and prophets and other ancestors. We believe that there are important truths we can learn from old scriptures, old sacred texts, old myths, and more. There's things probably lying about in old texts that we haven't discovered yet, in old things that we just had no idea that there was a possibility even that it could happen like that. There's stuff to learn from the past, but we do not dwell there as Unitarian Universalists. It's not where our primary focus is. Some might argue that Unitarian Universalism is really focused on the future. Working for justice is really important to us, and that means that we're looking for a now that isn't yet. The now that we live in has to be changed and transformed and has to make way for a future where we can all thrive, where healing and wholeness can actually happen, a future of equity and compassion. We're called to make things better than they are. We're called to help bend the arc of the universe more and more towards justice. Our faith movement profoundly is open to change and has high hopes for the future. We respect the past. We look to a hopeful future. But I think it's now that's really the important place for Unitarian Universalists. Those learnings from the past and those hopes for the future, they are just clues to help us understand how we should live now. The justice and healing and wholeness that we want to have happen for ourselves and for others will have a harder time happening if we aren't fully present to what really is happening now, to where we are now. The youngest of my nieces and nephews on my wife Kristen's side of the family is graduating from high school in just a few weeks. They did not ask me permission to grow up. This impending commencement has sent me back to one of my favorite commencement speeches. It's one that was given by the novelist David Foster Wallace in 2005 to the graduates of Kenyon College. It is published under the title This Is Water, and if you go to YouTube and just Google This Is Water, the words David Foster Wallace will come right up in the search window, and you'll find like interesting animated versions of the speech that he gave. One of the things that Wallace lays out so well in the speech is how our main struggle is often just to be aware enough to be able to make a choice about how to understand the present moment. It's really difficult to be fully present to now. For Wallace, the problem is a delusion that convinces him that he is at the absolute center of the universe and therefore everything is about him. Think of it. Have you ever had an experience that you weren't the absolute center of? Everything is about him. He lays out a scenario where he asks you to imagine being stuck in a crowded supermarket. Maybe this isn't going to be too much of a tax on the imagination, but imagine a crowded supermarket after a long day of work, being frustrated and angry about how much traffic you had to get through to get there, and then frustrated and angry because when you get to the supermarket, you experience it as hideously lit and crowded with long lines, which is stupid and infuriating, it feels to you. And then you get told to, when you finally get through that checkout line, you finally get told to just have a nice day, spoken to you in the absolute voice of death, Wallace says. Wallace's first step to get out of this frame of mind is simply just to imagine for a second what other people's lives might be like. Maybe that SUV that cut him off on the way to the supermarket, maybe that was being driven by a parent with a sick child in the passenger seat. Maybe the parent in the checkout line in front of him who was yelling at her kid, maybe that person has been up all night holding the hand of a husband who is dying of bone cancer. Wallace says, if you're automatically sure that you know what reality is, and you are operating on your default setting, then you, like me, probably won't consider possibilities that aren't annoying and miserable. But if you really learn to pay attention, then you will know that there are other options. It will actually be within your power to experience a crowded, hot, slow, consumer hell-type situation as not only meaningful but sacred, on fire with the same force that made the stars. Love, fellowship, the mystical oneness of all things deep down. There is real and difficult stuff going on here and now, and how are we going to respond to it? In the poem by Danica Kelly that you just heard, there's plenty of ugliness in the world. The images are gross enough that I'm not absolutely sure your minister should have chosen to have them read aloud to you. So I'm not going to read them to you again. But despite the ugliness, the poet responds again and again, I am in love. To the ditch lily, I say, I am in love. To the jeep parked haphazardly on the narrow street, I am in love. To the roses, white petals rimmed brown, to the yellow-lined pavement, to the house trimmed in gold, I am in love. I shout with the rough calculus of walking, just let me find my way back. Let me move like a tide moving in. How is she able to respond that way? Why does she choose to respond that way? She writes her name in the sand, kind of a declaration that she is here. Talking about her poem, Kelly says, often I am thinking about how I can ground love, feeling it, being in it, and being present in my body, in my joy, in my work. These moves feel so urgent to me as a black lesbian in this political and cultural moment where the news each day seems to argue against my and my loved ones' humanity. Because of what now is like, it feels even more urgent to Kelly that she share her love and her joy. It's not that she's chosen only to focus on herself. The reason to share her love in the world is because it feels like the world needs that love. She could simply focus on how it feels that she and her loved ones are being dehumanized, and who could blame her for that? It wouldn't be wrong to do that. It isn't wrong even to feel tired and frustrated at the supermarket, but given what is going on, who you are and who you want to be, what choice are you going to make? What does the moment where you are now, what does that moment call you to do? What does the moment you are in now feel like it needs? For David Foster Wallace, being able to think through these questions means that he has to think about the question of what to worship. He argues that it's clear that there is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. Our Transcendentalist Unitarian ancestor, Ralph Waldo Emerson, agrees with that, adding that it behooves us to be careful what we worship, for what we are worshiping, we are becoming. So what is going on here and now? Consider that question for yourself. What is going on in your here and now? What sort of response could you give to your here and now? And now broaden the circle. Go ahead and think about our political and cultural and environmental moment. When I think about our here and now, I think this. Broadly, we are fundamentally disconnected from one another and from the planet. We are disconnected even from our own deepest, truest, best selves. We are disconnected, and so we forget to honor one another or to be respectful or to be thankful. We are disconnected, and so we keep ourselves from experiences of awe and wonder. When I think about what our situation is here and now, I've been thinking lately about the Surgeon General declaring a public health epidemic in America, and that's loneliness. We are disconnected from each other. If you want to significantly increase your life expectancy and reduce your risk of depression and dementia and stroke and cardiac disease, join in community with other people. That's it. Being in community with other people is one of the best things you can do. It's better than quitting smoking. It has a bigger effect than quitting smoking. This is why, when I think about the general decline in participation in religious communities, a decline that's been greatly accelerated by the COVID pandemic, why, when I think about that trend, it feels so sad to me. We need connection with one another, now more than ever. And this situation is why I feel so proud and excited to serve this congregation, because this is a congregation that feels that need and is doubling down on religious community. We feel the need, and so we're answering the call in big ways and in small ways. Okay, one way that might seem small or even self-serving, we've got a plant fair next weekend, right? People have been working toward it for weeks. And it is a fundraiser, and that's great. It's going to help keep us going fiscally. But it's also an exercise in community and growing community and joining in with other people. It's also an exercise in growing the sense of connection in everyone who shows up to buy a plant. It's about encouraging connection with one another and with the earth, with the simple dirt upon which all of our life really depends. And bigger ways, we are buying property and we're gonna build. Because given our here and now, we hear a call. We hear a call. One of the ways that we've been trying to answer that call is by articulating actually what our building project is all about. And so there is a statement that we've passed. The design exploration team came up with this statement together, and then it was voted on and welcomed by the New Home Task Force. There's hurt in the world, and we are called to respond to it, right? So what's our call? It is to create a welcoming meeting house for our congregation and the greater community that lives lightly on the land with a strong connection to nature and is full of natural light and fresh air, that looks to the future with spaces for tranquility and for diverse, multi-generational community, a meeting house that inspires curiosity, creativity, and reverence. That sounds like a worthwhile project to me. I don't know quite how to finish this, so I'm going to let Pablo Neruda do this for me. Is that all right? He wrote a poem called Ode to the Present. Part of it goes like this. This present moment, smooth as a wooden slab, this immaculate hour, this day pure as a new cup from the past, no spider web exists. With our fingers, we caress the present. We cut it according to our magnitude. We guide the unfolding of its blossoms. It is living, alive. It contains nothing from the unrepairable past, from the lost past. It is our infant, growing at this very moment, adorned with sand, eating from our hands. Grab it. Don't let it slip away. Don't lose it in dreams or words. Clutch it. Take a luxurious bite out of the present and whistle along the road of your destiny. May we be inspired to choose to live aware of the hurting now, and so always connecting with love, fellowship, the mystical oneness of all things deep down now. May that be so.